Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Boiled Leather Audio Hour. My name is Sean T. Collins. I am a TV critic who covers Game of Thrones and many other shows for such publications as Rolling Stone, Vulture, and the New York Observer. I am the founder of All Leather Must Be Boiled and A Song of Ice and Fire / Game of Thrones weblog located at boiledleather.com. And I'm the co-author with series editor Ann Grohl and Westeros.org and The World of Ice and Fire's Elio Garcia Jr. of the official annotated Game of Thrones, which was once available. I don't know where it is now. People have been asking, but I promise it exists. And hopefully I can find it one day and share it with all of you lovely people again. And with me, as always, is my illustrious co-host.
Stefan Sasse, I am a contributor to the famous fan page The Tower of the Hand, and I have my own blog for all things nerd at thenerdstringera.blogspot.com. And today we are going to talk finally about a topic that has been burning under our nails for quite some time. And it is the always funny game of trying to foresee what will happen in The Winds of Winter, which hopefully will come out soon. We keep our fingers crossed, of course. But today we want to make some predictions about what is going to happen in The Winds of Winter. But before we do that, we have two other announcements that we are going to make to you, which we hope you will be as excited about as we are. So the first of those is that we finally managed to get our acts together and to professionalize ourselves and to set up a Patreon page. So in case you are not familiar with Patreon, Patreon is a quite beautiful system in which you can support artists you like, not only us, but a myriad of other guys as well. And you simply pledge a certain amount of money, at least $1, but anything is welcome. And that will be paid monthly directly to us. So it would be great if you consider Patreoning us, being a patron for the Boiled Leather Audio Hour. But aside from that, we also have a little emergency on our hands, which Sean will tell you a little bit about.
Yes, my laptop is broken, and I need to get it fixed. There was a mishap with the screen. It's expensive. I am at a sort of low ebb financially right now, and so rather than tie that into the Patreon, because it's kind of an immediate expenditure, and it's difficult for me to actually do work, as opposed to like stealing my fiance's laptop to Skype or whatever, we kind of need to fix that ASAP so that I can keep the lights on around here and continue to do this podcast. So yeah, basically there'll be two separate things. If you go to boiledleather.com, you'll find a link to a PayPal page where you could donate anything you want. Any amount helps, cause it's a MacBook Pro Retina screen and it's fairly expensive. I think it's going to run, around $600 to $700, which is a lot of money for me right now. So any amount helps, honestly. You guys were so good when this happened last time. I had to get a whole new laptop, and you guys put a sizable dent in that and made it possible for us to continue recording and for me to continue working. So, you know, any amount helps. Now, you know, but don't overdo it, because we would really like to get you to support the Patreon too, or the Patreon, tomato, tomato, I'm not sure. And that's located at patreon.com, or patreon.com/boiledleatheraudiohour. And we have a whole bunch of cool goals, that involve, getting some new equipment for Stefan, like a mic, improving our recording software. And then I think the most exciting thing for a lot of people will be, you know, kind of guaranteeing a certain number of episodes per month. Not to toot our own horn, but that is the number one complaint about the show, that there's not enough of it. And the number two complaint is that it doesn't sound good enough. So with any luck, you know, depending on the amount that is pledged per month, we'll be able to address both those problems. I can promise you I don't want to write any checks with my mouth that my ass can't cash just yet. But we have some really incredible guests lined up for the Salon series, which we started with Slate's Jamel Bowie last year, but haven't really kept up with. and that will help these get done. You know, basically, it's a way to make the podcast competitive with the things that Stefan and I need to do to make a living, because the hardest thing for us is carving out the time to do this. Part of that is there's an enormous time differential between me in New York and Stefan in Germany, but the other part is that, you know, given the choice from between doing the podcast and doing paying work as a full-time freelancer, I literally must choose the paying work. So even if there's just a little bit of money coming in, that'll help us, I think, emotionally, if not financially, justify continuing to do this podcast. And there'll be some other little tricks and treats in there too, I think. Perhaps, you know, maybe some swag and some cool stuff that you can get from us, I think, maybe. We'll see. But anyway, yes. So the Patreon is at patreon.com/boiledleatheraudiohour, and the emergency laptop screen replacement fund is a PayPal button located at boiledleather.com. And, you know, in advance, I really can't thank you enough for your generosity. You guys have all been so supportive, in word and deed for the entire time we've been doing this podcast, and we really do appreciate it. And I think that's enough commercial appeal at this point, right?
Okay, so let's jump with both feet right into our topic today, because predictions for the upcoming novel or novels are a pretty hot topic around all the Song of Ice and Fire tumblers right now. So naturally, we have to get into the game and also talk about it. And we thought a little bit in advance about how we will structure this. And we thought about dividing up Westeros and Essos simply into geographical locations and take a look at the POV characters, where they currently are, with whom they are interacting, and what will most likely, from a narrative standpoint, in our view, happen. And just in advance, we will be wrong about stuff, of course, and you will disagree with some of our stuff, of course, so we are really, really excited about hearing your opinion in the comment sections of Boiled Leather, of the Tower of the Hand, and of Nerd Stream Era, where you most likely, one of those sources you will have found the podcast. So please share with us what you think will happen, where we are right, where we are wrong, and we will get a fruitful discussion out of it. So with that being said, we should start our podcast where the original story starts, which is north.
All right.
Like, way, way north. So I say we take the northernmost point of view character, which is Bran right now in some unmarked cave, together with Bloodraven, who has just started his training. So, Sean, let's just kick it off. What do you think will happen with Bran in the Winds of Winter?
Well, I'll tell you what I don't think will happen with Bran in the Winds of Winter is that we're not going to learn that he's secretly the Antichrist or working for the Antichrist, as we've established. Right. Yeah, in past podcasts, you know, I think there's zero reason to believe that whatever unpleasantness may be going on with the Children of the Forest, that they're not fundamentally who they say they are, and that they're not fundamentally working for the good of humankind and life in general against the others who are working for the bad of humankind and life in general. I don't see any reason to question any of that. You know, I suppose with Bran, that the question is just how far out do his powers filter into the rest of the story at this point. Now, we've seen from some preview chapters that there's reason to believe that he's already, or Bloodraven, you know, tough to tell, but I would assume it's him, are already meddling pretty directly in certain affairs in the North. I think the questions that remain are, you know, is he going to skin change into a dragon? I don't think the dragons will get to the north in this book, so I would put that aside for now. Is he going to use his ability to look into the past to give us the real story of Lyanna and Rhaegar and the Tower of Joy? That I also kind of assume will be saved for the final book. I suppose, just thinking structurally, his main challenge will be whatever happens to or at the wall, which I've long assumed will fall in this book. That, I guess, is my take on it. And then, you know, on a personal level, I think there'll be some fallout if you believe Jojen has been killed, which at this point I kind of do. If you think there'll be consequences with his skin changing into Hodor, there's questions about his personal feelings about Mira. That's all stuff that I think is bound to be addressed in this volume.
I would be really surprised if we get significantly more Bran chapters than in A Dance with Dragons, you know, which had three. So I'd expect one or two more, but certainly not more than that. Mm-hmm. And I would also really expect him to go down a little bit the wrong or darker path, especially with this working into Hodor, but learning that it is wrong, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
We got this information quite prominently in the prologue of Dance with Dragons with Varamyr Sixskins, that it is expressly forbidden to warg into human beings, that this is evil. So Bran needs to learn that lesson. And right now he simply is careless about it. He doesn't do it because he's evil. He simply does it because, yeah, he's a child, he has superpowers, he doesn't know any better. So I would expect this to be quite a formative element of his plot, which should be resolved at the latest, at the half point of the novel. I think. Mm-hmm. Just a prediction here. And as you already said, he definitely is reaching out to people through the Veerwood net. Most prominently here, Theon Greyjoy, but it will certainly not be restricted to him. I don't really know who else he would reach right now. It might be possible that he gets a connection to Jon Snow while he's in Ghost, but I'm not quite sure about this. I mean, he reached out to Jon once before in his dreams, unconsciously more or less, when he taught Jon where to find the Wildling army on the Big Ranging.
Yeah.
And it might just be possible that there will be yet another connection between the two that will draw John more from this, from the world he currently inhabits or inhabited until his assassination, to this magical realm of stuff happening. You know, Bran is so far the only character, the only POV character, to be precise, who is experiencing directly the metaphysical realm. And at one point or another, all three heads of the dragon need to go there. And I think we are in agreement when we say that Dany, Jon, and Tyrion are those.
That's right.
So we need to get them all there. And I agree with you, again, that this will not happen in the Winds of Winter. But the groundwork has to be laid. So I guess that a lot of Bran's story will be about this, with a very carefully dosaged background information of historical events that he will witness through the tree net. What do you think? Will we get a glimpse at the Isle of Faces and the Green Men?
That's an awful big dog to put in this story and not ever have it bark. So I kind of think yes. You know, until you mentioned it, I hadn't really given it a whole lot of thought. It doesn't seem like it. I don't know. It feels like it matters to me, but maybe it doesn't. You know, maybe that's a you know, just a note to our listeners. Like, I'm not really. I suck at predicting because I don't stand by anything except for Tyrion being Aerys' son. That I stand by. Other
and
than that, what's that?
From the future.
Oh yes,
future.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah, Danny. Yeah, great. This is Daenerys from the future. It is known. Anyway. You know, I could also see, like, you know, often are all this to do about the Isle of Faces and the Order of the Green Men, someone showing up there and there's nobody there. You know, they've all been dead for
thousands and thousands of years.
Right, right. So, but that seems, I mean, if anyone's going to get us there, it's going to be Bran.
Yeah, or Dany when she returns to Westeros. That's also a possibility.
That is possible, yeah, yeah.
But that will not happen in the Winds of Winter to just take that in front. Okay,
well, I think she may land, and that's it. That's the end.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yeah, so you mean as the last chapter or something?
Right.
Yeah, then maybe.
Yeah.
Like the half-season finale of Battlestar Galactica in season 4?
Yes.
Like, we're on Earth, and it sucks.
Exactly.
Like, this is the fabled Isle of Faces, and all there is a giant pile of poop.
Yeah.
Fossilized. Something like this.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's move on south of the wall, where we have Jon Snow, who I guess we're both in agreement will not stay dead.
No, he's not staying dead. God bless HBO for, like, keeping the secrecy to the point where they're not even sending review copies of the episodes to any critics at all. Like, we're all going to be watching blind, you know. And I assume that's to protect the secret of Jon Snow, which, I mean, come on. Come on.
Yeah. Worst kept secret ever.
Yeah. But, you know, to in all fairness, it's just because people thought about it a lot, you know. And it just seemed like there were so many potential ways for him to maneuver out of that. You know, this is a rare... It's funny because people talk about it like it's a spoiler that the book readers all know he'll be back. But no, we don't. We just assume with a great degree of certainty, but we don't know. It's just something that we all kind of came up with on our own and agree to. But he'll be back.
Yeah, and I also think this is, once again, an interesting point to get to our recurring theme of narrative constraints. Because John coming back is not a question of whether or not Melisandre is near, or whether or not Ghost is near, or whatever the actual mechanics of it will be, because that doesn't matter squat. The point is that John's story simply isn't complete. When Rob died, or when Eddard died, their stories were basically over. You know, this concluded their arcs pretty violently, of course, but their stories were over. But John's is anything but. Mm-hmm. So it simply makes no sense to not bring him back somehow.
Yeah.
And I think the more interesting question is not how he will be back or when he will be back. I guess it will happen in the second chapter he has, and the first will be called Ghost. Or something like that, you know? or it is in the same chapter, but I really expect the chapter title to be Ghost. So, yet another way too specific prediction.
Yeah.
I think we got this whole plot about Beric Dondarrion back in A Storm of Swords, basically to show us what resurrection does with you, how it messes with your brain, you know, this part of you gets lost, and are you my mother, and all that kind of stuff, you know, Thoros, are you my mother, Thoros? So John will definitely be dead in some capacity. I'm feeling like Obi-Wan, I told you the truth from a certain standpoint.
Right, right.
So yes, he will be dead. Whatever comes back will not be the Jon Snow we know.
That's true, but I tend to believe that he will move in a more... It'll be less like Beric Dondarrion and more like Gandalf the Grey becoming Gandalf the White.
Yes.
You know, because... And I think the variable that's present for Jon that wasn't present for Beric is Ghost. And...
Yes.
You know, so just on a logistical level, there's a reason... There's a way for his spirit to sort of preserve itself instead of whatever presumably happens to people who are just resurrected by the fires of R'hllor. You know, their spirit starts dissipating and it is brought back but not intact. Ghost buys some time. Obviously, if you die and you stay in the body of an animal that's linked to you through your skin-changing abilities or your morphing abilities, you eventually lose your human consciousness to the animal side. But you have a certain amount of time. A certain amount of time that Beric didn't have, and that Catelyn didn't have, and obviously Drogo is a kind of separate phenomenon, but similar, you know, you're supposed to lose something when you come back. And I think, just thematically, ice and fire put together is what's going to save Jon from the fate that befell Beric and Catelyn and Drogo.
Yes. I mean, Beric talked about the void which he experienced after dying, mm-hmm. and in which he went every time after he died, and which he experienced for quite some time. And this is what really crushed him, this feeling of being alone until Thoros resurrected him once more, and then leaving something in the void every time.
Right.
So John won't be alone. He will be in Ghost. So this alone will help him. But on the other hand, this will be a transformative experience for him.
Yes.
Because he will dive headfirst and really unexpectedly into the magical metaphysical realm that is the Song of Ice and Fire. You know, Bran has been lifted into it. He also had this horrifying traumatic incident with the fall from the tower and all that kind of stuff. But still, he got a pretty smooth sailing into it, piece by piece, learning more and more. And for Jon, it will be a much more rushed and brutal and disrupting affair.
Yeah, because Jon will be expected to lead still. You know, when Jon comes back, no one's going to be like, okay, you can go work in the kitchens, you know?
I think he won't be interested. That's the thing about it.
You don't think he'll be interested in leading?
Yes. I would expect that, some people will come up to him. But I guess he will basically bolt the Night's Watch first chance he gets.
Well, no, yeah, I don't think he'll lead the Night's Watch anymore. I think he'll lead humankind, you know? And his concerns will be even bigger than the Night's Watch's were.
Okay. So how do you think this will play out?
I don't know. That's just, man, I talk a good game, but then when you press me on it, I kind of fall apart. No, I don't know. My point is that I don't think he'll just wander off into the North solo, like the last hero.
No, I don't think that as well.
Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, I think when he's resurrected, he'll be resurrected into the middle of a fucking bloodbath between the Wildlings, the Watch, and Stannis' men, and Sallys' men at the wall. I think that'll be total carnage.
Yes, and I think the Wildlings will win.
Yeah, I kind of think, well, you know what, I'm not sure. I just don't remember what kind of strength of arms Stannis left behind.
Not much. Just a guard for Sallys.
Okay. Well, then, yeah.
The Wildlings are wildly superior. Wildly. I guess...
And unless they hit Tormund Giantsbane at the exact same time that they hit Jon. It's funny, this makes me think of the von Stauffenberg plot against Hitler, and one of the reasons it fell apart is, like, they everything rested on them killing Hitler, but they didn't bother to, like, arrest Goebbels or any of the other higher-ups or surround their offices or do anything, really, you know. It was all riding on this one magic bullet, and when that failed, it fell apart. So the mutineers had better have thought of a way to also take down any other potential rival centers of power, including Tormund, and maybe even including, you know, prominent people in Stannis' party.
It might result in a standoff.
True. Yeah, I don't know. I kind of think it's going to be a bloodbath. That would be my guess.
Yeah, sure, but the result of the bloodbath might be that both of them basically disengage, and the Night's Watch remains will be holed up somewhere, and the Wildlings in a meta siege, and then Jon will show up and say, "Well, let's leave to Hardhome or wherever." Yeah. Do you think he will go to Hardhome?
Someone's going to Hardhome. I think probably our prologue chapter will take place in Hardhome.
Okay. That might be it.
Yeah. I don't think Jon will go to Hardhome. I think we'll find out what happened in Hardhome. We'll probably actually see it in the prologue.
And one theory I read, I don't exactly recall where, I think it was poor Quentin, he said that Jon will go to Hardhome because that's the ideal spot to meet Benjen Stark. Which is an interesting idea, because Benjen Stark might actually still be around, and he would be one person who could tell him about his heritage. So that might be a direction. I'm not really sold on the idea, but it makes sense.
That's true. I guess that's possible. I actually would lean towards not seeing Benjen again. Like, if I had to choose either or, I think, you know, our last sighting of Benjen, so to speak, was the freshly hidden cache of dragonglass weapons.
Yeah.
I think that was Benjen, and then who knows what happened to him afterwards. I don't know that we'll ever find out.
I also think it was him, yes.
Yeah. Now, here's a question for you. He can also get this information, Jon can, that is, presumably, from Bran, or from Bloodraven.
Yeah.
And so I'm curious as to, you know, this kind of came up in the Bran portion of the discussion. When Jon, presumably, wargs into ghost, will he hear from Bran and or Bloodraven? And what information will be imparted to him at that point? And will he reemerge from ghost and then from whatever, you know, again, presumably Melisandre does to resurrect his body, forearmed with that knowledge of who he is and what his destiny is? Which is two separate questions, but I think not really.
Yeah, I don't think that he will, in his death period, if we want to call it that, learn about his heritage. You know, that he is the son of Lyanna and Rhaegar, and all that kind of stuff. That has to be reserved for some later time. And I think Bran doesn't know yet either. So what I would expect him to get, I fully expect him to have some kind of revelation while he is in limbo. And I would expect it to go along the lines of Bran's wish and after he fell from the tower. You know, his near-death experience, like seeing into the heart of winter and knowing what the struggle for humanity's fate will be, all that kind of stuff. You know, knowing the stakes and perhaps even rejecting them in the beginning.
Right, yeah.
I don't think it will go that smoothly, you know, like he will be resurrected and he will be Gandalf the White and from then on lead the efforts of humanity in the fight against the others. That wouldn't be Martin. So John has... What Martin is interested in, let's start it this way, has always been the humans at the center part of the story. You know, how people react. And if you are dead and you get resurrected and you now have this big fate thrust upon you, and humanity's fate is in the balance, and you, as a what is John now 17, have to decide it. That crushes a person, and it would be the most natural thing to try to run away from it by either leading an army somewhere or doing whatever. Really, I'm not quite sure what he will do, but I doubt that he will simply go looking around for the Sword of the King and then lead humanity's army into battle.
Yeah, that makes sense. But I don't know. Maybe I'm a little bit more of a true believer here than you are.
Yeah, I guess he will do that ultimately. Mm-hmm. You know, in A Dream of Spring, he will definitely team up with Dany and Tyrion, and he will get Rhaegal and all that kind of stuff. But that still has to happen. And somehow I imagine him visiting... after he learns about his heritage, he really needs to go south at some point before the finale, because I don't think he will survive the finale. So this may or may not be triggered and started and set up in the Winds of Winter already.
Yeah.
But I really doubt that we are going to see the continuation of the tenure as Lord Commander Jon Snow. That period is over.
Correct. Well, that's settled.
Yeah, let's do a quick one, Theon, because I don't think he will be among those who are surviving the Winds of Winter.
What do you think is going to happen to Theon?
I think he will be executed by Stannis. Not really? Right. Yeah, not right in the chapter that we have seen so far, which is, I guess, Theon 1 of the Winds of Winter. But I really... would assume that he will get some knowledge or whatever that will help Stannis later, most likely a secret way into Winterfell or something like that. But after the Boltons are defeated, or in the immediate preparation for it, I think it's likely that he will be killed. Because there is really no discernible reason for Stannis not to kill him.
Well, if he's told by magic not to do it, which I assume is why they're maneuvering the execution to the Weirwood tree.
Yes. Maybe. I just don't think that Theon has any greater role to play after the Battle of Ice, you know? He is utterly broken, and he yearns for death. If you remember what he is thinking about in his sample chapter of The Winds of Winter, how he has a death wish, really, and really tries to goad Stannis into finally killing him, like behaving like the total jackass, I think he will grant him that wish. So, and the Northmen will demand it, which makes a political issue.
So you don't see Lord Commander Theon or...
No, no.
or Good
I
King.
Also don't think that Asha will ever take him as a version of Theon Latecomer, because this doesn't seem like the way that the Ironborn plot in general is heading. But we'll get to that.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. Who's going to... Right, right. You know, something I just thought of is that perhaps the Ravens are maneuvering Theon beneath the Weirwood tree so that he really... Not to save him, but so he's executed in a place where his blood can do some good by feeding the power of the Weirwood tree.
Maybe, yes, maybe.
Which is kind of fucked up, Ravens. That's nasty. But, you know, those birds, they're rough customers.
It would be quite interesting because it would give Theon only one chapter and then... mm-hmm. Which would be a really deviation from the formula and catch you off guard. Which is not to say that just because of this it will happen, but it is definitely a possibility that I can see. Because I don't know what you would do with a totally broken Theon after.
Yeah, I really don't know either.
It's more clear for Asha, I think. She has much more stuff to do. She has a clear agenda of what she wants to do. She has something she wants to achieve, and she's in a unique position to achieve it. So I guess she will survive.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think Asha, as we've discussed when we've talked about her, just as a character, points the way to a future for Westeros. You know, which is, it's so funny because I've really come around on her over time. If you'll recall, I was not a huge Asha fan initially. But I do think you have to look at these things in relative terms and compared to the maniacs who are in her family and who run the Iron Islands, she's a pretty sane figure and I think is likely to grow more sane over time. Given what she's being exposed to with, you know, hanging out with Stannis and them. So, she's high on my list of people who I think will survive the entire series, let alone
yes, absolutely.
This battle. Yeah.
I think if she survived this battle, she's basically safe.
Right, right.
And there is no reason for her to die in the battle because she has this broken foot and she's a hostage and all. So I don't see how she would die. Mm-hmm. But I think she will be, together with Theon, our main point of view character for everything Stannis and Bolton's in the first quarter or so, at least, of the book. So what do you think? How will the Battle of Ice play out? And what will be the fate of the Boltons?
Well, the Battle of Ice, you know, I think will be like the battle from... Was it Ivan the Terrible?
Oh, yes.
Where, you know, they ride out on the ice and then they all fall down. And then Manderly will rout them from behind. I don't think there'll be some mix-up. People have talked about this, where, like, Stannis will slaughter the Manderly faction and then be like, oh, shit. I don't think that'll happen. I think Manderly will demonstrate which side he's on by murdering as many Boltons and Freys as he can, like, in full view of Stannis. Not murdering, I suppose. It's a little strong. Well, I don't know.
Not really, no.
Not on this podcast. War is murder, goddammit. But, you know, but by turning on those forces. And so I think Stannis will win, which is interesting if you are given to make comparisons between the books and the show, because obviously he didn't on the show. But it's a different... Those are very two different things, as I've been saying for years and years. And... From there, I'm not sure. I mean, I suppose the question is who writes the pink letter and when is it written? And is it a lie or is it a truth or is it the truth or is it some mixture of that? And, you know, I've long assumed that Stannis colluded with Theon to write the pink letter and, you know, and perhaps even with a captured Ramsay who he was kicking the shit out of, to lure Jon south from the wall to bulk up the forces to storm Winterfell.
Yeah, that kind of never sat right with me, but I, for a long time, I wasn't exactly sure about who really wrote the damn thing. Really, I'm not quite convinced that Stannis did it, or anyone else besides Ramsay, especially for this reek and all that kind of stuff. And yes, of course, Theon could have helped, but he doesn't seem to be in a mental state to stage such an elaborate con right
now.
Well,
no, I don't think he's the one writing it, but all the information that's present in the letter about what's going on at Winterfell and who's there and what happened is stuff that Theon could convey to Stannis, or from that, you know, Stannis could reasonably infer that this or that is happening and come up with a convincing forgery.
Yeah, that's true enough. And I've read yet another theory which heavily rests on one thing that Stannis says to Justin Massey before he dispatches him to Braavos in order to get some mercenaries, which right. I think will not amount to much, the mission in itself, but it will be hugely important to Arya, but that when we get to Essos. But he says to Justin Massey, you may hear reports about my death or something to that effect. And it may even be true, but you need to continue your mission.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So what Stannis gives, warns him explicitly that he will hear reports of Stannis' death. So what many people have argued by now is that Stannis will fake his own death, you know, and in order to lull the Boltons into a false sense of security. And he has everything he needs to do that, because not only does he have the Manderleys, he also has the Karstarks, both of which are loyal to him, unbeknownst to the Boltons. They may suspect with the Manderleys, but absolutely not with the Karstarks. So if Karstark army arrives at Winterfell, carrying Lightbringer, claiming that they, according to plan, fell upon Stannis and that they killed him, you will have suddenly 600 men loyal to Stannis in Winterfell.
Oh, that's a good... interesting.
Yeah, I also thought this was very convincing, and Ramsay would be really excited, enthusiastic, and he would write the damn thing because he would be in such a good mood.
Yeah.
And then and this has the added benefit that it doesn't need a con or anything, because then simply Ramsay would have written it in a false environment, you know, with faulty intelligence.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean,
which is pretty elegant.
Yeah, yeah. I like it. I don't like it as much as mine, of course, but I
yes,
like it.
Of course, of course. But I think one of those two, it will be. Stannis or Ramsay himself. I don't really see much value in those theories about Mance Rayder having done it.
No, no.
So one of those two.
Right.
Has to be true. And I think we're also in agreement that Stannis ultimately will take Winterfell and kill the Boltons, right?
Yes. Yes.
So
that was easy.
Yeah, that is also interesting, because this is one of the things that the show really hasn't emphasized, and therefore wasn't there to capitalize on when they decided where to go with the Stannis plot. But in the books, we have an emphasis, especially in the Game of Thrones and the Clash of Kings, over and over again, how central Winterfell is to the north, that there are those hot springs, the glass gardens, that it is huge. Yeah, you know, this castle is much bigger than any castle needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
And it is called Winterfell. So it has to become a focal point in the northern plot. Whoever is there will basically be at the center of things in the north, especially once the wall falls, which I am also sure we are in agreement about.
Yes, yeah.
I mean, this wall has to fall. You don't build a 700-foot wall and then don't bring it up.
I agree with you. I definitely agree with you. That's going to be entertaining. Looking forward to that.
I think it will be the epilogue, by the way. Epilogue of Winds of Winter, or last chapter, depending on whether it is an epilogue. But it will happen in the Winds of Winter right at the end.
Yes, yes, it will. So who does that leave us up north? Davos?
We have Melisandre.
Melisandre. You know, Melisandre, I think, keeps up. It's different again than the show, where she's got to question everything. You know, it's she's just going to keep up.
Not yet.
Right, not yet anyway. status quo ante. In fact, she has a worse read on the situation in the books than she did on the show, because in the books she actively believes that, Blood Raven serves the Great Other and so on. And so she'll be working against him.
I don't really think, because she has no method of acting against him. She's just aware.
Right.
At the moment. She might give false intelligence to Danny if the two of them ever meet.
Mm-hmm.
Or to John, maybe. But I don't think that she will actively act against him. But I would think that she once again links up with Stannis, especially after the massacre at the Wall, link up with Stannis and be in Winterfell, because once the siege of Winterfell is going, they need to sacrifice Shireen, right? Because Martin confirmed that this will happen in the books, and you need a really dire situation for Stannis to do something like this and to wake the stone dragons or ice dragons or whatever, and really the dragons beneath Winterfell are just another case of name dropped once too often to not be there. So it may just be that Melisandre will have her change of heart and her moment of revelation, much like in the show also, when they sacrifice Shireen and then have to come to the realization that Stannis is not, in fact, Azor Ahai.
Yeah, and that'll be, I guess, how does she weather that? I don't think she does.
She might just break, yes. Yeah. I don't think she will be opportunistic, because at that point in the story, other than in the show, there will be no need for her.
Right, yeah, I agree.
No function she has to perform. Like in a show where she needs to resurrect John, she could simply totally break.
Right, yeah, because she's an object lesson in the dangers of fanaticism.
Yes,
books.
Absolutely.
And she's not going to survive, an irrefutable debunking of her core belief.
I also don't think so.
Certainly not, when Daenerys shows up, presumably with the backing of the entire faith of R'hllor from Essos behind her,
Yeah. But only in that will only happen in A Dream of Spring, and I don't think Melisandre will live to see it.
That's true. Now that I think about it, I'm actually curious as to whether Melisandre is indeed a Red Priest in good standing, or if she's some sort of heretic.
You mean a rogue, basically?
Yeah. Never thought of that before, but...
Might be that she's rogue, yes, because she's also never referenced in Essos.
Right.
I mean, even Thoros...
Thoros, they talk about.
Yeah. Yes, so they would know about Melisandre, right?
Right.
So it's a little bit weird, but I guess there will be light shed on this in the books to come. So we have one person left, which is Davos,
mm-hmm.
who is also in the North, and currently... he's hunting for Rickon.
Mm-hmm. He'll be riding unicorns, baby.
Yeah, who knows?
Fighting cannibals. Or maybe he's going to, next time you see him, he'll show up, at the head of an army of cannibals on unicorns with, Bran and Asha and, and he'll be, some sort of cavalry from that corner.
At the light of the third day, look
right.
To the east.
You'll see an army of cannibals.
With his unicorn army.
That's great.
Yeah, I don't think so, but I guess he will find Rickon pretty quick. I don't think that this will be a longer story on Skagos.
No, I think the story of Skagos is just going to be him as Martin slowly introducing a cool new environment and creepy new people and cool monsters, basically.
Yeah. And Asha again, of course.
Right, right. Who now is going to be, maybe now she'll take her clothes off.
Yeah, who knows?
Yeah.
But at least you will get a more prominent role. I mean, Martin has promised, based on Una Chaplin's acting in season 2. So
no, not Una Chaplin.
Sorry. Yeah, that's Rob's wife. How is she called?
Tonks from Harry Potter, which I don't even watch, but I know that she's Tonks from Harry Potter.
Okay.
Well, I'm blanking on it, and this is super embarrassing.
Yeah, absolutely. You should be ashamed of yourself. Okay, but then he will return with Rickon, but I can't really fathom Rickon being any player in what is to come.
Natalia Tena is her name. Or Tena.
Ah,
Natalia
yeah, right.
Tena. There you
You are, how do you say, you are excused.
All right. Yeah, no, I don't think Rickon will be a player. You know, I think it's just like, it'll be nice that Rickon is alive.
Yes. I think he'll be dropped in White Harbor, and then Davos will make his way to Winterfell and to Stannis, mm-hmm. most likely. And I really hope that he survives all of it.
Me too.
I think he will.
Poor Rickon.
Can't kill everyone.
No, you can't kill everyone. And let that be a lesson to our listeners. Who try to, and those people out there who try and outdo the nihilism, you know, and like, no, they're gonna die, and John's really dead, and the others are gonna win, and the children of the, no, you can't kill everyone. You cannot kill everyone.
This is a fantasy story, you know, so, yes, it is always darkest before dawn.
Right.
But still, there will be light, and all that happens before that is bad, and that is depressing, and at times even nihilistic. It will all build up and give us a much bigger high, a much bigger finale than we would have if it had followed a traditional trajectory. But it will be a final battle between good and evil, and good will win. You know, Martin isn't trolling us.
I agree. Yeah, this is not Michael Haneke's A Song of Ice and Fire. It's not going to be like Funny Games, you know, where they turn around and wink at the camera and kill everybody.
No, absolutely right. Not. But that basically concludes our tour of the North and our podcast for today.
Yeah. And thanks again, everybody, for listening. It looks like this is going to be a series of podcasts now on our thoughts of on The Winds of Winter, which I think is going to be pretty cool. And you will make it that much more possible for us to do it if you stop by patreon.com/boiledleatheraudiohour and pledge a certain amount per month. And the more that you all collectively pledge, the more episodes we can do, the better they'll sound. There might be something in it for you besides our brilliant knowledge and wisdom and lovely voices. And again, if there's any way that in addition or instead or whatever, preferably in addition, you can swing by boiledleather.com and, you know, just chip in just any small amount, really, to PayPal to help pay for the computer that this is 99 times out of 100 recorded on. I'd be really, really grateful, and you'd make the continued existence of the podcast that much more possible. So, yeah, thank you everybody for listening, and thanks in advance for donating or whatever you choose to do, and we'll see you next time.
Yeah, bye.